Are you looking for entertainment for a fundraiser, outreach, youth night, date night, or for a conference? Does your team need a way to improve team camaraderie, confidence, and communication? Well, look at Wellverse Comedy for a show, performance, or a workshop. Wellverse Comedy is Chicago's clean comedy team, and we're ready to serve you, your audience, or your organization. We've headlined our own shows at the Second City, at Getty's Comedy Club in Indianapolis, and started our own TV show called His Line. And we've raised over $5,000 for charity in just the last 2 years. We are now booking for your back-to-school bash, fundraiser, and even your holiday parties. Contact us today, and let's see how a night of high-energy, clean, original, family-friendly comedy can make your next event memorable for all the right reasons. Connect with us on social media at WellversedCMDY. That's at WellversedCMDY, or online at WellversedComedy.com. WellversedComedy.com. For booking information, email us improv@WellversedComedy.com.
Welcome to the Gifts for Glory podcast, where we celebrate and promote men and women using their gifts for God's glory. Know someone who is making an impact for God's kingdom using their gifts, talents, and passions? We'd love to meet them. Send us an email at podcast@giftsforglory.com. That's podcast@giftsglory.com. And now here is our host, Dave Ebert.
Hey, we are back. It's been a while, scheduling conflicts and all this sorts of different things going on. So we're so glad that you're joining us, whether you're joining us live on social media, or you're catching us on rumble.com, or listening to the podcast on the Taken TV Network's podcast channel, or your favorite podcasting platform. We thank you for joining us. Hope you're having a great day wherever you may be. And we're just really excited to have this guest tonight. It's going to be a lot of fun to have this conversation. So I'm really looking forward to sharing it with you. I want to remind you that if you are looking for a great way, maybe planning your back-to-school bash for August, maybe even your holiday parties, the planning is underway already, please consider Wellverse Comedy for an improv comedy show, clean comedy, interactive, high energy. It's going to be a great time. We love to laugh and share in what we believe is God's gift of laughter. He knew how stressful life would be. He knew the ups and downs, the ins and outs of life. And so he gave us the gift of laughter, and we want to share that gift with you. If you have any interest in bringing a comedy show to your event or a fundraiser, your back-to-school bash, holiday party, whatever it may be, reach out to us at improv@wellversedcomedy.com, improv@wellversedcomedy.com. And with that said, let's dive into our Devotion with Dave segment. Tonight's Devotion with Dave is coming from 1 Peter. Let's pull that up for you. 1 Peter chapter 5, verses 8 and 9. I'm reading out of the NIV tonight. It says, "Be alert and of sober mind. Your enemy, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion looking for someone to devour. Resist him, standing firm in the faith, because you know that the family of believers throughout the world is undergoing the same kind of sufferings." Now, these two verses, I believe, pack a lot of to consider, a lot to really chew on. Be alert and of sober mind. To me, that just speaks of this day and age. Right now, things are happening so fast. There's so much going on. We need to be alert, not obsessed, not diving into every single news article, but be abreast of what's going on. Be alert. Be of sober mind, knowing that there is evil encroaching on our children, on our institutions, from every direction. We need to be alert and of sober mind so that we know when we need to gird up into the full armor of God. Because the enemy, the devil, is prowling around like a lion looking for someone to devour. We have the Lion of Judah, the more powerful, the strongest lion, but the lion is still a lion. So even if it's, even if we have Mufasa or Simba, the enemy is Scar, and Scar is dangerous. So, not to make light of it, but just for the example, there are good lions and bad lions, and the enemy is the bad lion. But we have to resist him, standing firm in the faith, because we know that the family of believers throughout the world is undergoing the same kind of sufferings. Here in America, we are very blessed. We're very protected from a lot of the persecution and the dangers of being a Christian. We don't face prison or death yet for our faith. Many countries in Saudi Arabia, Iran, China, North Korea, some places in Russia, choosing Jesus is a potential death sentence. Here, you might get canceled if you adhere to the Bible and people will shun you. But shunning is not real persecution. But I do believe that the groundwork is being set up for it. But that's not the topic for tonight's show. But I want to encourage you to be alert and of sober mind. Pay attention to what's going on. Know that there is an encroachment by the enemy against our families, against our kids, against the church. And we need to be alert and of sober mind, ready to resist, standing firm in the faith. And that's our Devotion with Dave segment tonight. I hope that you're encouraged. I hope that you realize that you are not alone. That you know, the Bible promises that you're not alone. Number one, we have the Holy Spirit. And number two, you are not the only one going through suffering because the entire body is under attack. The enemy is looking for every opportunity to stumble someone, to hurt someone, to limit their effectiveness. So you're not alone. Take solace in that. Like, just like the prophet Elijah, he had to be reminded that he was not the only one that was going through the things that he was going through. So that's our Devotion with Dave segment coming from 1 Peter chapter 5. I hope that spoke to you and that encouraged you. Now let's get to our guest. Our guest at this time, he is a doctor. He's standing against the status quo in big healthcare because, unfortunately, in many sectors, healthcare has become business-oriented and not care-oriented. And our guest, Dr. Johnson, is someone that's fighting against that. So I want to show you a little bit about our guest. This comes from his website. You find his website online, obviously. It's at yourhomemedicalcare.com. Let's check out this trailer about Dr. James P. Johnston.
We picked Dr. Johnston because he has similar values to our family, and it actually is really nice that he can come to our house versus go to a doctor's office. He comes in and takes care of all of us. So if we all have a cold, he looks at all of us, and I don't have to have an appointment for each child.
I love that I can text him at any time and he will get back with me. Sometimes if I just need a short phone conversation with him, we can just set that up that day and visit. And he is so accessible, whereas other doctors wouldn't even dream of letting you have their cell phone number.
Yeah, we really like Dr. Johnston's practice because he's pro-life, but also he really cares about my family, and he comes to our home to do in-home consultations, and that's really convenient and fantastic for us.
We have 8 kids, so as a family of 10, it's hard to get everyone into a doctor for an annual well checkup, but Dr. Johnston comes to our home. He sits at the dining room table, he does a well checkup on everyone, and he leaves, and within 2 hours, I've had a well checkup on 10 people.
I so appreciate Dr. Johnston because he is good with parents having vaccine choice over their children, whatever they feel led to do or feel is right, that he doesn't pressure us or push us to do that. And if we choose not to do that, he is fine with that. That was huge for us in choosing Dr. Johnston as our doctor.
About a year and a half ago, our family had COVID and Dr. Johnston prescribed ivermectin. It was so nice. He called the pharmacy when we had some issues getting it and verified that the pharmacist would fill that medication for us. He also gave us a protocol of different supplements and vitamins to use to help us clear up.
Having been a medical director of 2 nursing homes, I think the best and safest place for our elderly parents and grandparents is living with their family. And so I designed my fee schedule so that if you let your elderly parent or grandparent come live with you, it may only increase your price $5 or $10 a month, even though it might be 10 times more work for me, because I want to promote that. And I'm excited about that aspect of Your Home Family Practice. The need is so desperate in our community right now for a direct primary care physician who will come to you so that you can avoid the germ-filled waiting rooms of ERs and urgent cares and your pediatrician's office. And that's one of the benefits of my care. You sign up on my website, yourhomemedicalcare.com, make an appointment, and I come to you. Last year, Atrium and Novant, the two largest medical conglomerates in Charlotte, voted for a policy to disallow their pediatricians and their family practice docs to continue to keep patients who don't get all the shots. However, I respect your vaccine choice. I'm independent. I'm not an employee. And it's important to me that people like us who don't get all the vaccines can get the care we need without being browbeat and kicked out of practices just when we need the doctor the most. I hope to be that doctor for you. Charlotte, North Carolina is the largest homeschool community in the world. And it's a shame that there are not more physicians who are comfortable with vaccine choice and homeschooling. I also have 10 children, and all of them have been birthed at home, so I'm a strong proponent of home birthing. So if you want a physician who's going to respect your choice to not vaccinate, to homeschool, to home birth, I'm your doctor.
So that is our guest this time, Dr. James P. Johnston. He chose to go small during the pandemic and the ensuing mandates. As he mentioned in that that commercial, North Carolina, two of the largest health giants threaten the livelihoods of their professional caregivers if they dare treat the unvaccinated, not hire, not employ, not bring on as contractors, but they refuse to treat the unvaccinated. And Dr. Johnston decided it was time to offer an alternative. And we're going to hear about his telemed services and his in-home services. Find him at yourhomemedicalcare.com. We got a lot to discuss, a lot to chat about. So please welcome my guest at this time, Dr. James P. Johnston. Dr. Johnston, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on, Dave.
I'm excited to hear because during the last 3 years, we've seen medicine become almost weaponized against people, because if you want to say no to certain things, you no longer have that right. You could say no, but we're not going to, you're fighting against in North Carolina. People chose to say, we're not even going to treat you if you're unvaccinated.
Yeah.
No matter what your reasoning is.
That's pretty bad. It's horrible.
I'm somebody that comes from a family that has a lot of heart conditions. And when the vaccine first came out, you heard rumors and grumblings that there are certain heart conditions that were inflamed or created post vaccination. Mm-hmm. And as somebody that has a family history of cardiac conditions, I was like, I'm not risking it. I've had COVID. I've survived. Mm-hmm. Why do I need a vaccination against something that might hurt me more than help?
Right. And so, you can't beat natural immunity anyway. So it's just all side effect, no benefit.
Right. So when, all the pandemic and then the mandates and everything that came across, how did you come to the conclusion, well, it's time for me to go small instead of kind of go along with what's going to be best probably financially for me or for you? What kind of led you to the decision to get to yourhomemedicalcare.com?
Well, as in med school, I always spoke up for my faith, and I had a suspicion that several vaccines were made with abortive fetal tissue. And my research and inquiry, I called Pfizer, you couldn't speak to anybody in the know. And there's actually a Catholic website called childrenofgod.com, I think, and they go through the acronyms and the physician's desk reference and what those words mean. And I realized five vaccines that are mandatory for children are made from aborted fetal tissue. So when they came out with the COVID vaccine, I'm not anti-vaccine, if people are dying right and left, and the vaccine's safe and effective, I don't judge that at all. But this vaccine, even if it was safe and effective, was made by killing babies. And I have a problem with that. Yeah. And so I was suspicious from the get-go, long before, we even had COVID. So when the vaccine came out, I was working in an urgent care, and this urgent care was going to mandate the vaccine. And there was a big meeting, and everybody at this particular urgent care, Concentra, which has like four or five urgent cares within an hour of Charlotte, said, we got too many doctors out. We got too many nurse practitioners out. We're going to have to shut down a clinic if we don't eradicate COVID. So we're going to mandate the vaccine. And I raised my hand and said, ma'am, all the doctors and nurse practitioners out with COVID right now, we're vaccinated. And you're going to lose me because I have natural immunity and I'm not going to get a vaccine to make you happy. That's dangerous. It's one of the most dangerous vaccines, you know, we've ever had. It's amazing. It's still on the market. There's more deaths attributed to this vaccine than all previous vaccines combined going back 40 years. Yeah. And that's according to the government's vaccine adverse events reporting system. And so other staff members started whispering. They kind of closed the meeting. And the staff member came to me and says, well, I'm not getting it either. I'm not getting it either. I'm going to go work for another place if they're going to make me do it. And so as a result of me standing up, I get a call from the boss of North Carolina Concentra 5 minutes later saying, did you speak up at a meeting and bash the COVID vaccine? I said, yes. So he asked me nicely not to do it again, but said, we're reversing our policy as a result of how many people who refuse to get vaccinated because you open your mouth. So it was pretty exciting to realize that the whole policy for the whole state of North Carolina changed because I just spoke up and I said, it's not an ethical vaccine. It's a bad vaccine. It's not worth the risk. And so, you know, that was about the time I quit doing urgent cares and just really launched into my practice. And that was like a strong selling point because of the medical fascism we're seeing in our country and in Charlotte.
And this is Charlotte, North Carolina. This is, you know, kind of in, you know, on the outskirts of the Bible Belt. This is a place where it's, politically speaking, North Carolina is more red than blue, but for the entire state of North Carolina to, you know, the medical facilities anyway, kind of go that far, it doesn't seem to make sense.
Doesn't make sense. You know, the policy forced vaccination was actually implemented before COVID. So these companies they thought the best way to get everybody vaccinated is to not have them be able to see a doctor in town unless they do. And I'm sure a lot of people got vaccinated that were otherwise uncomfortable with vaccines. Yeah. How many people got the COVID jab because they didn't want to lose their job?
Right.
And so, you know, it was just, it's just bad medicine. And it's not fact-based anymore. Doctors are just rule-following employees. They're not entrepreneurs who do independent study anymore. They just do what they're told. Yeah.
Because I look at, and I know it's not apples to apples, but if Aldi sells 3 heads of lettuce that have E. coli, the whole crop is pulled back. Right. If 3 cases of people get sick from a batch of lettuce, they pull the whole thing. Tens of thousands at least have been injured. Hundreds, if not more, have had complications that led to their death. We saw an NFL player at the prime of his life at 24 years old die on the field. He was brought back, thank God, but he died on the field. His heart stopped on the field after a relatively mundane hit.
Yeah.
And we're still like soccer
players, swimmers, joggers, runners. The spike in athletes' deaths is just gone through the roof. I mean, the evidence of the danger of this COVID vaccine are literally overwhelming. If it'll make you conspiracy theorist, the more you study it. Why doesn't the CDC know this? Why aren't they pulling it from the market? They have such an effective censorship grasp on the public's mind by way of the media that if you try to break through that, you just come off as an idiot.
Yeah.
It's funny. I had two doctors complain to the North Carolina Medical Board that I dared to prescribe ivermectin for their sick patient, their COVID infected patient. And one of these ladies was elderly, was in the hospital. And fortunately, the families wrote letters to the North Carolina Medical Board saying, Dr. Johnson saved our loved one's life. And so when I got acquitted of that, of any wrongdoing, about a year and a half later, I was celebrating, but I also was emboldened. I was emboldened because while I was being on trial before the North Carolina Medical Board, risking the loss of my license, a doctor on the medical board learning about my practice, contacted me and said, I have COVID. Can I get ivermectin from you? Please don't tell anybody because I'm on the board that's hearing your case right now. And so I was just so emboldened. It was like, you know, Nicodemus coming to Jesus by night because he didn't want the other Pharisees to see, needing ivermectin because he was convinced of the evidence. I've known doctors who didn't like the hepatitis A vaccine and then use my policy on vaccine choice to not offer me a job. When the CEO of the whole place agrees with me, but he wouldn't speak up. He wouldn't speak up in defense of my position. So there's a little bit of persecution to people who are willing to speak up right now, but it's a cross I'm willing to bear.
And it is a it's the beginning of those birth pangs. You know, Jesus talked about basically the contraction is getting closer and closer. So as far as persecution, it's getting closer because the one or two voices willing to stand up, yeah, you're losing your job, but they're setting the groundwork for much further and deeper punishments for you getting out of line. So, and that's kind of the story of your life right now. In the first 15 minutes of our conversation, just being the one voice willing to stand up and the ripple effect it has. So I would hope that anybody that watches or listens, that you would be encouraged if you feel the umption to say something, you may be the one catalyst necessary to make a change because you saw personally that an entire state's organization changed their policy because of one rabble rouser. and you were just speaking truth and playful. It wasn't like you came in with torches and pitchforks and burned the place down. You just said, hey, this doesn't make sense. And, and sometimes that's all it takes is just one person willing to stand. So I want to encourage anybody that hears this, just take a stand. And if you fall flat on your face, that's a great place to start. You're prostrate before the Lord.
That's right. I'm really encouraged by the resistance we're seeing. We're seeing half the states in the country have bypassed the stupidity of the medical groups and made ivermectin increase the access to it, either forcing pharmacists to fill scripts that they were refusing to fill or making it over the counter like New Hampshire did. So that's very encouraging to me. And it tells me the tide's turning a little bit and the censorship is losing its grip. We have a significant part of the population now are getting news from alternative sources. Thanks to Trump and kind of what he did and bashing fake news. I think the tide is turning a little bit and we're going to see a stronger division between light and darkness. But the darkness still has all the institutions, the medical institution, the federal government, the judiciary. We still have an uphill battle, but it's exciting to see some of these changes.
Absolutely.
I really hope they pull the vaccine from the market with some of these hearings on Capitol Hill where they're grilling the vaccine manufacturers. I think there's still a chance they may pull this from the market.
Other countries are starting to. They're finally starting. Even Australia, as outrageous as their lockdowns and everything was, now I've heard stories of basically payment for damages to people that were forced to take the vaccine.
And that's so encouraging.
It's encouraging. The one thing that does get me, though, is that a safe medication with 5 decades of marketplace visibility, that pharmacists were interfering with doctors' orders. I understand when like a pharmacist sees like medicine A always has a bad reaction with medicine B. So maybe I'm going to say, let's do something else, but to actually stop a doctor's orders. To me, that feels like it's unheard of and it's entirely outside of the bounds of their job.
And it's really based upon a lie that they have a moral duty to do their job. The evidence for ivermectin was overwhelming. It's safer than Tylenol, which is over the counter. I mean, it's been used 3.7 billion times, won a Nobel Prize, and it's been used in cancer. They've been giving it to prostate cancer patients for years. You know, no one has a problem with off-label prescribing evidence. Everybody who gives an underage child a puberty-blocking hormone is prescribing a non-FDA-approved medicine. Nobody complains. So the idea, well, it's not FDA approved. Nonsense. They don't even believe that. It's just a lie they tell to justify persecuting you. But I mean, we over 90 studies with greater than a 95% confidence interval level, which is the gold standard, showing it's safe and effective at eradicating deaths, eradicating COVID, shortening hospital stays, shortening illness, reducing time to reducing transmissibility. I mean, so many different ways they studied this and proved that it's safe and effective. It's crazy that doctors have been bullied into complying with the CDC idiocy. It really is crazy. As, you know, one other thing that's encouraged me, you mentioned Australia, but Liberty Counsel. I sent a lot of patients over the last 2 years to Liberty Counsel in Orlando, said they had a class action lawsuit for everybody that was denied jobs or education because of religious objections not being upheld. And I said, that's, you're going to be able to sue. You're going to be able to get back pay. And it's happening. 100 employees at one hospital who all lost their job just won a lawsuit thanks to Liberty Counsel defending them in court, and they get back pay and they get their jobs back. New York, which is a strongly pro-vaccine state, the New York Supreme Court granted all state workers their jobs back with back pay because they used religious exemptions that their bosses did not respect. And so, yeah, the tide's turning a little bit. That's exciting to see.
And it is exciting to see, but at the same time, for me, I still weep for the loss that we can't get back. The time with family, the elderly that had to die alone because grandkids couldn't visit. Because, you know, if the grandkids visit, they're going to kill grandma. So grandma dies of a broken heart instead because she can't see her kids.
Or solitary confinement. So many people died in solitary confinement in nursing homes. Yeah. And turns out it was totally necessary because they all got COVID anyway. Mm-hmm. And they had natural immunity. So it was really, really sad.
Yeah. So I'm really encouraged and thrilled to see more physicians, more doctors willing to stand up and say, I will treat the patient and I will not be a member of the new Third Reich saying, well, I'm just following orders.
Yeah.
So it's really,
COVID really died down in February. It really died down maybe January. But man, it's coming back. I just got 3 orders today for ivermectin for people with acute COVID. So, you know, there are spikes. Ivermectin's easy to get now. You can get a one-time consult with me and you can have it in a couple of days.
Yeah. Very awesome. So I encourage everyone, especially if you're in North Carolina, to visit, yourhomemedicalcare.com. In part of your bio, it talked about telemed services. So are you available to those outside the immediate Charlotte area?
Sure, absolutely. I treated patients in all 50 states. Thanks to the FLCCC, the Frontline COVID-19 Critical Care Alliance, they have listed all the pharmacies that will fill a script for ivermectin. A lot of them are compounding pharmacies. And so it's easy for people to find a pharmacy. And if they don't have one in your state, like California doesn't have any, well, there's several pharmacies that ship all over the country. So you can get ivermectin, and it is life-saving. COVID is a dangerous illness, especially with causes a lot of heart attacks and strokes and otherwise healthy people. It's that M spike protein that does a lot of neurologic damage and a lot of handicap. And I'm treating a lot of long haul COVID right now. And I have a great success rate with long haul COVID therapy. But the FLCCC was really, you know, because there is so much fiction with fact all mixed together in alternative media, right? Mm-hmm. Are you injecting, you know, electronics into you with a vaccine? There's some people that believe that. Mm-hmm. And so I just let those guys sort through the evidence and the facts and kind of, you know, because I trust them, they're smart and they're always looking at new therapies, off-label use of medicines. They have a wide breadth of knowledge. They're experts in their field, and I trust their judgment. So, you can go to my website, order a one-time consult. Within 24 hours, you know, get what you need.
Awesome. So for those listening, that's yourhomemedicalcare.com. It's also going to be in the show notes, so I encourage you to visit the website. And you get in contact with our guest, Dr. Johnston. So one of the things that I learned about you just about an hour before we came on the air is that not only are you a doctor, you're an author, and you wrote a book that became a feature film called The Reliant, which starred Kevin Sorbo, Brian Bosworth, and just a host of people that you recognize their names. Josh Murray, who's a friend of mine on Facebook. He's an actor out of California. Tell us, kind of transitioning a little bit, tell us a little bit about the book, The Reliant, and then how it became a movie.
Well, actually, it was my second screenplay, but I had edited a book by Pastor Matt Chuella called The Doctrine of the Lesser Magistrates. It's a biblical, it's the defense of lesser magistrates interposing between the tyrant and the people they're oath-bound to protect and resisting. As a like a sheriff saying, well, I'm not going to take people's guns. There were many sheriffs that did that with some gun confiscation mandates, like Montana, when they said, we're not going to do national ID. And they held it up for 10 years because Montana refused to do it. And so there's lots of biblical examples in scripture. The Josiah, Jehoiada, the Hebrew midwives refused to obey Pharaoh because they lied, basically, and said the babies came out too quickly.
Right.
But they were disobeying a higher authority. But they had authority as midwives, and they were protecting the children. So it's a biblical principle. And so I edited this book, and I told him, I said, Matt, you need to make the whole book this one chapter, because he tells the story of Magdeburg, Germany. When Martin Luther died, the Roman Empire invaded, and they basically did away with all evidence of the Reformation, forced compliance in all towns except one, the city of Magdeburg, Germany. And they survived a 13-month siege, and it's literally the greatest come-from-behind victory in world history. They saved the Reformation, or we may not even know about those 95 theses if it wasn't for Magdeburg. So I'm like, that's the Braveheart story of our generation. We could ban abortion at the state level. We don't want to have to wait for the Supreme Court. We could protect marriage. We could protect the value of the dollar. You know, all these things, lesser magistrates should step in and protect the rights of those under their jurisdiction. Yeah. And he said, you do it. I like nonfiction. So I got a book on screenplay writing, and I made a screenplay of it. But it's an expensive siege warfare $40 million film. And as I was pitching it at film festivals, Stephen Kendrick of the Kendrick Brothers, faith-based filmmaking heroes, he said, that's too expensive for a first-time filmmaker. Just do something you can afford. What do you got? You got guns, you got property, you got 10 kids. I see a movie. Make it happen. And so I wrote The Reliant within 1 month of that conversation.
Wow.
And then I created a little trailer. And after that trailer was made, man, the money really started coming in. I realized we're making a movie. And when Sorbo bought on, we basically quadrupled our budget in a month. And so we filmed that, and it came to theaters in 2019. And we won 26 first place film festival awards. So it did really well, even at secular festivals.
Wow.
You can't watch it right now. Our contract with Amazon Prime and Netflix have ended, but we're going to be releasing a producer's cut in the coming months, and we'll be live streaming that.
So in the meantime, if anybody wants to find the book, you can find it at thereliantnovel.com, which is it links to the Amazon page. And if you want to check out the trailer so you can get excited about when the director's cut comes out, and you can find that at thereliantmovie.com. I really enjoyed it, and being a faith-based film that is a little bit gritty, it was refreshing. For somebody that had subscribed to PureFlix for a couple of years, there's some really fun, uplifting movies, but very few are willing to get gritty and realistic. It's always it's the same story arc. It's almost like Hallmark Movie Channel became Christian.
Were safe. They wanted to be able to show them in churches, and that's just not the kind of movies I'm going to make. I want to make movies that sinners want to go see twice. Yeah. I want to make Braveheart without the language and nudity. You know, I want to make movies. And that, by the way, that movie is probably still the most talked about movie behind pulpits in the history of the world. And yet it's got nudity and language. It's like Christians will put up with a lot of smelly stuff because of the awesome things about that story. Mm-hmm. So why can't, Petra sang a song one time back in the 80s. why should the devil have all the good music? Because they were doing Christian rock and really breaking ground. Well, why should the devil have all the good movies?
Right.
Why can't Christians make great movies with unpredictable plots and exciting, you know, storylines and tell stories that are just life-changing? Those are the kind of movies I want to make.
Yeah. Tangentially, one of the movies that fits that description that just came out, Nefarious. Are you familiar with it? Have you seen it?
I am. I haven't seen it yet.
But it nails that idea to the core. There's no magical scene where all of a sudden the main character breaks down and is saved. It's real. It's about the spiritual battle that we face. And just tangentially, I encourage everyone to check out Nefarious. It's actually having a comeback in the theaters. There's theaters that dropped it that are picking it back up. Here we are a month later after release. So I encourage everyone to check that out. And also, of course, check out the Reliant movie and be on the lookout for the director's cut.
Yeah.
So there's one more film you're kind of working on, and the trailer should be dropping sometime this week or early next week. Tell us as much as you can about the new project. And
sure, it's called Oberlin. It's a true story set in 1858, 3 years before the Civil War. Two U.S. Marshals kidnap a runaway slave named John Price off the streets of Oberlin, Ohio. And his best friend, who was a free black man, the first black man to be admitted to college in the United States, his name is Charles Langston. He rallies the town of Oberlin to arms, leads thousands of whites, free blacks, runaway slaves to try to rescue John Price. They catch up to the marshals at a train station in Wellington. So it's often referred to, if you Google it, the Wellington Oberlin rescue of John Price. And there's a stalemate, basically, where guns are aimed at each other and nobody wants to kill anybody. And so there's a stalemate, and the local sheriff arrives and arrests the two U.S. marshals. So John Price and the other captured runaways were freed. And the prosecution of Langston earns Oberlin the title, the town that started the Civil War.
Hmm.
I mean, it's the fact that 3 years before the Civil War, a black man took up arms against two white federal agents to try to free another runaway slave. And all three branches of the federal government were firmly pro-slavery, with the Dred Scott decision coming down from the Supreme Court, the Federal Fugitive Slave Act. President Buchanan at the time was totally against abolition and totally for free slaves, or for unrestricted slavery. And this man, David and Goliath, he rescued John Price and was vindicated in a court of law. It's just a great story. And I'm excited to tell this story in a way that honors those heroic rescuers. And I love stories that deal with the doctrine of the lesser magistrates, because it resonates with us. You know, the local sheriff obeyed Ohio law and defied federal tyranny. And, you know, it's exciting. That's a good story.
It's exciting. It's a good story. And maybe, hopefully, an encouragement to do likewise, because we've long forgotten in this country that the power comes from the states to Washington,
right?
Not from Washington to the states.
Mm-hmm.
So
states the masters of the federal government.
Yeah,
we existed first. We're the parents. They're the kids.
Yeah,
but they've made themselves masters. They've usurped, and it's not the state's duty to submit to tyranny. Exactly. So, you know, I'm excited that states are beginning to resist on. I mean, even liberals don't have a problem with state resistance. I mean, almost half the states in the country have legal marijuana in defiance of two Supreme Court decisions. 2001, 2005, the Supreme Court said states may not resist federal policy when it comes to medical marijuana or recreational marijuana. And the states did it anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, it's bad medicine, but it's good law, because it's outside of the federal government's jurisdiction. States should handle all things. You know, Article 9 and 10, whatever is not explicitly granted to the federal government belongs to the states or the people.
Yeah, absolutely. So would you consider Oberlin, is it a faith-based film, or is it just a good story? Is there a faith element to it?
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, everybody at Oberlin were fiery preachers. That was Charles Finney, America's greatest evangelist, right? He baptized 100,000 people in a 10-year revival in New York after he retired from the dean, position of the dean at Oberlin University. You know, God really anointed him for winning souls. And when he came to town and revivals happened, the saloon shut down. You know, it changed the culture, not just a few people's lives on Sunday mornings. It really impacted the culture. So he's one of my favorite theologians. So that he is part of the story, because he hid John Price in his home on campus. He hid runaway slaves. He was involved in abolition and the Underground Railroad. As a matter of fact, throughout most of the country, the Underground Railroad ended in Canada, where they were free under the law. But so many slaves found help and assistance in Oberlin that when they got there, they stayed. Because help with jobs, education, you know, housing. You're coming in with rags, you know, been a slave your whole life, you can't read. Well, you're free, but now what?
Right.
Well, the church really rose, and our hero, Charles Langston, really, even though he was hailed, you know, the first black man admitted to college in the U.S., he was really hailed, but he still stooped. He did what the Bible said, condescend to men of low estate. And I appreciate his heroism, because what he did was truly remarkable.
So what you're saying is that we as Christians are not mandated by Romans 13 to always bow to the law, right?
Well, when you realize that the law makers are also obligated to submit to higher authority, because all authority comes from God. No one is God. No one has absolute authority. When the devil says, take a mark, 666 on your forehead, are we going to like, oh, we got to obey the higher authority? No, the higher authority has limitations. We all know this. If a sheriff tries to kidnap, an off-duty sheriff comes in and tries to kidnap your daughter in the middle of the night, you're not going to let them, or you shouldn't let them. You should protect your child, because just because he has a badge doesn't mean he's acting in your best interest. So the law comes before the lawmakers. We obey the law. And our forefathers agreed and said, every law contrary to the Constitution is void. John Jay, our first Supreme Court justice, said it that way. So it's not binding.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Dr. Johnson, I want to transition now. And we've talked a lot about faith, and I want to hear your story. Did you grow up in a Christian home? How did you find your salvation in Jesus? How did that happen? And
it's an interesting story. I was raised in my dad wanted to go to the mission field, Togo, West Africa. And so for several years, we went on deputation. I'm the oldest of five boys. And so we would travel, stay in people's homes, sing and minister in church, and you know, try to raise money and get support. Well, halfway through that, my sister died of an accident in the home. And as a result of that, I was only seven, but the mission board decided to put a delay and said, you know, you need to grieve. We encourage you to get a job in a church and apply again in a year and get some grief counseling. And he did, but my mom didn't handle this very well. She blamed herself. And so they never went to Togo, West Africa, actually. So, you know, we tried to raise money, but it never happened. So from a young child, I always wanted to do missions. In college, my freshman year of college, went to Florida State University. You know, I really backslid from the Lord. And a street preacher came to campus named Jed Smock, kind of a famous. He's been preaching. He died last year, but he was preaching on college campuses since the late 60s. But, you know, he said things that really convicted me. And, you know, I repented. I read the Gospel According to Jesus by John MacArthur. Really had an impact upon me. I wanted to be a follower of Christ, not just pray a sinner's prayer. You know, it's about submitting unto him as Lord, not just calling him Lord.
Right. You know,
Luke 6:46 says, why do you call me Lord and do not the things which I say? Jesus is like, why are you doing it?
Right.
You know, either submit to me or stop calling me Lord. Better be hot or cold than lukewarm. And so I decided to be hot, not lukewarm, and gave my misery back to God, asked him to save me. And so that was pretty profound. And God gave me a lot of opportunities to stand up through college and med school. Yeah. Married the love of my life when I was 27. We had 10 kids. Unfortunately, we're divorced now. But, you know, I'm always been a family man. I really love my kids, spend a lot of time with my kids, want to see them go into the ministry and serve God. And many of them are gifted musicians. So that's exciting to see my kids walking in the footsteps of the Savior.
At what point did you feel called into medicine? Was that part of your faith walk, or was that something before you pursued faith?
My dad was an RN, pediatric intensivist RN. He was really good putting IVs in kids. And so when I was 17, he got me a job at a hospital. And he'd always been saying, be a doctor missionary. Don't just be a missionary. Because I always wanted to be a missionary. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've gone to the mission field. I've been to India and Mexico and Italy and India several times, serving in a slum church in India. That was quite an experience. But my dad said, you'll be a better missionary if you can be a doctor. He got me good books on missionaries and, you know, the things they could do with a career, with a skill that they wouldn't be able to do unless they had a skill or career. And so, you know, I got into medicine primarily with a mission-minded approach. And, of course, you know, we go on short-term missions, but not permanent missions. Really got called to take a stand in this country, and you can get persecution just fine if you take a stand in the public square in this country. Mm-hmm. Did a lot of street preaching, actually, early. Me and my fiance at the time, when we got married in 1997, when we got married, we did our honeymoon. We traveled across the East Coast from college campus to college campus and preached.
Mm.
That's just what we love to do. We love to proclaim the gospel. And we started having kids. We became advocates of homeschooling. And I ran for state representative in 2004 on a platform to ban abortion at the state level in defiance of Roe versus Wade, to limit state funding to constitutionally justified obligations, no more pork for politicians to get reelected. And this is why I lost. I also ran on privatizing public education. So, yeah, that hurt me. As a matter of fact, the Republican Party in Ohio said they weren't going to support anybody in the primary. They're just going to support whoever the Republicans voted for. They would support them against a Democrat in the general election. But when I started running on that platform, they got scared and they ran somebody against me.
No.
I was running as the anti-Republican Party conservative because the Republicans were real rhinos in Ohio at that time.
Yeah. And I think that they still have a few of those. I think DeWine turned out to be one.
Yeah. Yeah. I had to work with him. So,
yeah,
but it was a good experience because, I was really involved in the Tea Party movement, doing a lot of public speaking. I really enjoy mixing faith and politics because Jesus is Lord of all, or he's not Lord at all. And right. So we try to categorize and compartmentalize our faith. Sunday morning, private personal prayer, what I believe in my heart. But when we go secular workplace, so we go get a job with the state, and then all that flushes down the drain because we categorize it. Mm-hmm. Eliminate the lordship of Christ over this area of our lives. And I didn't want to do that.
Yeah. And I kind of touched on that during the devotion at the beginning of the show. 1 Peter 5:8 says, be alert and of sober mind. Don't be obsessed with the news and what's going on, but be aware, because how can you fight against the enemy if you don't know what he's doing?
Right. Exactly.
So that's incredible. And then, so now you're working on films. You're touching everything, trying to make an impact in culture to try to bring people to the kingdom. And I think that what you're doing on all fronts is remarkable. And I'm really glad that that they connected us, yeah. Leslie and everybody at Felix.
Yeah, they're great.
So what's next? You know, we talked about the movie that you're working on, the trailer's dropping. What's next for you outside of that?
Well, I mean, with COVID died down, my salary is half of what it was last year. So try and invest in my practice, build my practice back up. I think there's a need for practices like this across the Southeast. So I'm working on expanding, you know, hiring nurse practitioners and physician assistants. There's so many of them that contact me all the time. Will you hire me? I don't want the COVID jab for the third time. They're going to make me get it. Will you hire me? So I'm going to exploit some of those contacts and hopefully set up Your Home Medical Cares, you know, all across the Bible Belt, really, where there, I think there's a great demand for doctors who are willing to respect vaccine choice, openly pro-life, going to people's homes, you know, without the big mortgage. You know, before, when I was CEO of a big practice in Ohio, you'd see 50 patients a day, 7 or 8 full-time staff, massive building, nurse practitioners. You know, you bring in $1.5 million a year, but you would take 15% of that home as a salary, right? You work 5 days, 4.5 days for the overhead, and then half a day for yourself.
Yeah.
And so this practice is different because I see 3 to 4 families a day. And I it's a lot of driving, but you go see them in their home. They don't have to wait in a waiting room. I do a lot of the urgent care stuff too, when they need stitches or whatever, when their kid falls and needs stitches, saves them a ton of money. And so, you know, I go to their home. I go within 30 minutes of Charlotte's Beltway. And so right now I'm investing in my practice, but I wrote 2 books over COVID that haven't been published yet. I'm really excited about my last book. My last book was my first nonfiction book. It was a biography called She Looks Like My Little Girl. And I met an 87-year-old lady now. She is. And she's a pro-life icon in the pro-life movement. But she's been there since the early Operation Rescue days, when 80,000 people were arrested over a decade for peacefully sitting down blockading abortion clinics. And so she was involved in that. And she's just a hero. We named our 10th kid after her. Her name is Eva Adel. And when she was 9 years of age, because she and her family were German speaking, when the communists ran the Nazis out of Germany, she was put in a death camp to be starved to death. Her Hungarian grandmother actually saved her life. She pretended to be Danube Swabian. That's what they called Yugoslavians who were German speaking, because they were 3 generations removed from Germany, but they held on to their German culture. And her Hungarian grandmother, who spoke her language, actually went to that death camp with her. But when she got there, she befriended the prison guards because they realized she was not Danube Swabian. She was Hungarian. You can leave. And she said, no, I'm going to stay for my daughter. Can I work in your barracks? So she would clean barracks, steal food from trash cans, and feed Eva, and kind of kept her alive. Finally, after about 1.5 years in there, Eva was skin and bones, legs stuck together because her skin didn't work anymore. And she was shaken and woke up in the middle of the night. And it was her mother. Her mother had been kidnapped by the communists, put in a rape camp, digging trenches all day. And she was really abused. She escaped her daughter, the communist rape camp, found her daughter's death camp, and through the course of weeks, snuck into the death camp, brought enough food to get her walking again. And then she found her 2 siblings who were at a work camp, and she smuggled them into Hungary across, you know, landmine studded fields, and ultimately to Austria into freedom. They all live in the United States now. It's such a beautiful story of rescue, especially the death camp scene. Every time I read it, I cry. She really walked with God as a little girl through the darkest days you could possibly imagine. And now she's a bulwark of faith and righteousness. And I just love her to death. So it's called She Looks Like My Little Girl. They can learn more about that at shelookslikemylittlegirl.com.
Awesome. So I will add that to our show notes. She looks like my little girl.com.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we'll definitely look forward to that. And it sounds like in your mind, you're already seeing that as a screenplay, not just a book.
Oh, it was such a good story. It's hard to watch stories, you know, with torture of kids and floggings. And, you know, so many Christian movies do that. You know, the main precipitating crisis is somebody dies. And everybody else is depressed the whole movie. You know, I don't want to see movies like that. I don't know if I want to make that movie because that would be hard to make. Yeah. If I did, it would probably be more focusing on her rescue work. That's fascinating to me. As a matter of fact, one of the books I wrote over COVID is basically behind the scenes look at the Operation Rescue movement. How did it die? what happened, the inside story. That's really never been told. I'm a little fearful of doing that because there are great pro-life heroes in the past that we probably all respect. But to tell this story requires telling some things that happened that are embarrassment to some people. So I've sat on that for a couple of years, and we'll see. Seeking God about it. I might, you know, I don't know. You got to tell the story. You just got to, people need to know what happened, because otherwise we won't learn from history.
Right.
Yeah,
absolutely. Well, Dr. Johnson, I wish we had more time, but I know that you want to get back to your family. You're on the East Coast, or it's already 9:30 your time. So I want to wrap up as quickly as we can with my two segments that we have on the show. The first one's the interrogation, seven random questions that otherwise wouldn't have fit in our conversation. And then the last one will be your wise counsel, any counsel you can offer somebody that wants to use their gifts, whether it's their talents or passions, their experiences, and use it in a way that honors God. So we'll ask you that to end. But now it's time for the interrogation. So first question, what do you do to unwind and refresh?
Hike. I like to hike. I get up. There's a couple great hikes in this area. I love to go up the mountains. I set my hammock up at the top of a waterfall, sit in there with my laptop and write. That's my God time. I'll really spend it writing and trying to minister to people through my writing.
Yeah. I grew up in southwestern Virginia, so very familiar with the Charlotte area and that territory. And the fall, you can't beat it in the mountains.
Yeah, yeah.
Awesome. Question number two. When we get to heaven, the great physician is there, so we won't need any doctors. What job do you want to do in heaven?
What job do I want to do in heaven? The hard job. Will there be hard work in heaven? I don't know. And a lot of people picture heaven as just easy going, fun, endless, you know, Sabbaths and laziness and eating. I think there'll be work. Yeah. I think there'll be, you know, God is always expanding his kingdom. So who knows the way he'll expand it next, but I'm excited to be a part of whatever he's doing.
Yeah. And that's the same kind of question we can ask pastors, because no pastor is going to be up there speaking, I don't think, because it's like,
right.
Well, you know, Billy Graham was great here, but why am I going to listen to Billy Graham in heaven when Jesus is sitting right over there?
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Question number three, with whom do you most identify in scripture?
David, but not just any David. When David was driven out of Jerusalem by Absalom, his son's rebellion, you know, with my divorce 3 years ago, that happened to me. Just man falls seven times and rises up yet again. So I'm coming back to Jerusalem. In God's timing.
Amen. Amen.
It was a hard time.
I can totally, I can't say I understand, but I can definitely empathize. As we talked before, went on the air, I've been there.
Yeah.
All right. Question number four. What's a talent you have that few people have seen?
A talent I have that few people have seen. Cross-stitching.
Oh, really?
Well, one of the things since my divorce is one of the things I do is I'll send my kids one letter a week with a gift. And so I've investigated ways to do things to put a smile on their face. So little plastic cross stitching, I'll stitch their name. I got one right over here. I'll stitch their name on it and just send it to them as a little gift.
Oh,
no cards, art. I'm doing art more and more. And the kids love it. The kids are now wanting to come over and do art because I'm getting them excited about art. My 7-year-old drew this the other day. It was a horse, and it wound up being like a magical creature.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Very cool. Question number five. Where would you most like to visit in this life?
Well, man, after writing the screenplay, When Swords Heal, about the Siege of Magdeburg, and writing the screenplay about or the book about Eva Adel in Yugoslavia, man, Eastern Europe, because Magdeburg was on the communist side of Germany. So I would love to visit Eastern Europe. I'm a big fan of Richard Wurmbrand, who founded Voice of the Martyrs, spent 14 years in communist prisons in Romania. I read all his books. And so I would love to visit Eastern Europe because a lot of people don't know. You know, there's a lot of controversial things I share in that biography because I talk about the way we allied with Stalin and painted him as a good person to justify defending Europe from Hitler. When Stalin, when he ran the Nazis out, he kept the death camps in operation. He let the Jews go and put the pastors and the priests and all the employers in and all the non-communists, the freedom lovers in. And they didn't shut down when the war ended. So Stalin, you know, Stalin's death camps continued to massacre and just chew up every freedom lover in the states where he conquered. And unfortunately, it's because of American leadership at the time. FDR was a socialist. And it's a sad story, but, you know, I was scared about telling that story because I didn't want people to think I was unpatriotic. But I think it deserves to be told. And I haven't read that story has not been told. But in this book, I'm able to tie it in because Eva learned to hate communism because of what she suffered.
All right. Question number six. And this could be one of two things. It could either be something good that you want to relive or something that you'd like to do over and fix. If you could go back and relive a moment, what is that moment?
If I could go back and relive a moment, what was that moment? I would like to relive my baptism as a 7-year-old because I don't remember it.
Yeah.
But my dad told me this story. It says, you were convicted. You were shaking. You were grabbing. You were sweating. And when I went down the aisle, we were sitting in the back and it was a big church, Southside Baptist Church in Greenville, South Carolina. He says, you went down by yourself as a 7-year-old. I'm like, what? He followed me down and I got saved and then was baptized soon after. And I don't remember it. As a matter of fact, in college, it bothered me so much. I got baptized again when I came back to the Lord my freshman year after a period of being a prodigal. I got baptized again because I didn't remember my first baptism. But yeah. I would love to go back and see myself and relive that.
Nice. And our final question of the interrogation is what is something you hope to accomplish? We're about the halfway point, but what is something you want to accomplish in 2023?
Wow. Well, the movie I'm working on right now, Oberlin, I would love to see Oberlin get funded. I mean, my first movie cost $1.5 million, raised it from basically 44, you know, accredited investors. We got a lot of money from the pro-gun crowd. NRA endorsed it. U.S. Concealed Carry Association funded it in part. And we just kind of raised the money from them. But this is going to be a $20 million film, not a $1.5 million film. But, you know, there's no shortage of money in Hollywood for films. There's just a shortage of good stories.
Right.
And so we have a great story. We're winning screenplay at film festival. We're winning screenplays. And so this story resonates with people. With the race problem we have in our culture right now, this story, in a winsome fashion, gives God's remedy. And I'm excited to tell that story and that God's going to use it. So I would love to see Oberlin funded, and I would love to begin to expand my practice into other cities.
Yeah. Awesome. And as you're talking, I'm just thinking about, we mentioned Nefarious earlier. You know, Kerry Solomon was the one that I was the director producer of Unplanned and then also got involved with Nefarious. So maybe Oberlin's nice. His next project.
Yeah, nice.
So hopefully from my lips to God's ears and God.
Come on, brother, let's pray. Amen. We take it. We always take it to God.
Yes.
He's going to test our faith. We just need to not give up. Man, so many reasons I had to give up on the Reliant. So many letdowns. Man, I could just tell you miracles God did. Can I tell you one real quick?
Yeah, absolutely.
20 seconds. So Sorbo agreed to take this, and we had a $250,000 budget, and he wanted half of it for 11 days of filming. And they're like, we just can't afford it. And so, but he signs on, and you have so many days to get the money in this trust, this account. He doesn't get it yet, but it goes in an account that he can get, you know, and but he sees that the money is there and his. And then he'll sign the paper. So I just told my team, I says, just how much money do we need? And they said, you need $85,000 by Monday. It was Friday. So I called the director. I said, we need $85,000 by Monday. He said, well, you want to let go of Sorbo? Let's just make a good DVD. And this is what God told me. He says, when God told Noah to build an ark, if he ran out of wood for the giraffes, he didn't let the giraffes drown. He asked God for more wood.
Yeah.
It's that simple. So, Paul, what we're going to do is we're going to ask God for more wood. He says, let's put the kids to bed. I put my kids to bed. You put your kids to bed. He had 11 kids. I had 10. And then we're going to meet and pray, and we're going to trust God to meet this need. And so I got back to the computer like 2 minutes before our phone call, and I checked my email. And just the faith, even before we prayed, just that faith, I opened this email, and the head of the U.S. Concealed Carry Association signed on to become an executive producer, $250,000 that we would not have to pay back. And he offered to use his 2 million subscriber list to push our project. So we raised another couple hundred thousand dollars from them, from crowdfunding. And two times God did that and just gave us just what we needed, right when we needed, just because we trust him and we believed in him. And we believed that he called us to do this. And we're going to do it for his glory. And we're going to see him shine. And we did. We saw God's hand at work in great ways.
So suddenly that prayer time went from a petition to praise.
It was, yeah, it was an amazing, you know, and God tested it again and again and again, but we pressed through and it came to theaters. It's one of the reasons, yeah, one of the reasons we had a problem with distribution and getting a really big, like 2 week release, we had to settle for one night in theaters, is because the NRA endorsed it and the U.S. Concealed Carry Association funded it. Even it doesn't even mention the Second Amendment at all, but a character in this movie defends having guns to protect them against villains. A teenage boy, 17-year-old, that was trained to shoot by his dad. And I packaged it to raise money from Second Amendment folks because it does defend the principle of self-defense. That's also found in Scripture, Luke 22. And it worked like a charm. We brought a lot of money in. Smith & Wesson gave us 9 guns to use in the film as long as we did a close-up. So, you know, God did good things there. But he met our needs in a great way.
Amen. All right. So before I let you go, final question I ask every interview. For anyone looking to step up, use their gifts for God's glory, what's your wise counsel for them?
Keep your heart right. It's not about what people see. It's not about the outward things you do. It's the things, you know, it's interesting to me that when Jesus saw all these people were giving money in the treasury, he said, you see that woman with the last mites, with the last 2 mites, 2 little pennies she put in. She put more in than all those people because of what it cost her. Mm. And so sometimes the greatest thing you can do for God is not be up behind that microphone, but taking out trash and serving others and helping somebody with a flat tire and just standing up for righteousness, being a good dad and adoring your wife, meeting her needs. You know, those are things that are, you know, there is no secular. Everything is God's. And so we need to, you know, honor him in the little things. And I think if we will honor him in the little things, then God can use us for greater things.
Amen. Good word and a good way to end the show. I want to encourage everyone again, visit yourhomemedicalcare.com and keep an eye out for when your medical home care comes to your city, you know, praying that it will expand and maybe take some of the power back from the corporations right, and bring it back home so that we can take care of ourselves and not rely on narratives for our healthcare. Right. And also be sure to check out InSurrealPictures.net to find out more about upcoming projects, including Oberlin, which the trailer should be dropping either late this week or sometime next week. So be sure to keep that page bookmarked on your web. And Dr. Johnston, I thank you so much for your heart, for your time, and just encourage you to keep pursuing God and leading the way.
All right. God bless you, Brother Dave. Take care.
God bless. And we will see you in 2 weeks here on Gifts of Glory. We're doing 2 shows a month, so we'll see you in June. Have a great night. And thank you all so much for joining us on Gifts of Glory Ministries podcast. And we'll talk to you soon.